Welcome. We'll call to order the November meeting of the Clark County Commission on Aging. This month is National Caregivers Month, and we'd like to recognize them. And our first item will be the approval of the agenda.
So move.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Secondly, we will approve the minutes dated October 17th.
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Now we will have reports from our representatives. The first will be the Area Agency on Aging and Disability of Southwest Washington, and the update will be from our representative, Pat Janik.
Because we moved this meeting up a week, the agency advisory council meets tomorrow, so there is no report.
Thank you. The Clark County Public Health Advisory Council, our representatives, Amy Gross, and Amy's unable to be here this evening. We'd also like to excuse our chair, Marjorie Liddell. Marjorie is currently in another meeting, and one that has great civic importance as well. Okay, our presentation this evening is Complementary Alternative Medicine. And Dr. Jamie Mackler studied language and culture in China. She has an MS in Oriental Medicine and also a naturopathic doctor. She has focused on treating women's issues and all others. She also is a wonderful cook and enjoys sharing her home-cooked meals with families and friends, swimming, hiking, horseback riding, and puttering in her garden. So thank you very much. We'd like to welcome Dr. Jamie Mackler.
Thank you, Marianne and Jackie, for all the communication with me prior, and thank you for the committee for allowing me to speak.
You're okay. Push the button again.
Okay. I just need to be a little closer. Okay. Thank you. So once again, thank you for the Clark County Commission on Aging for having me here today. And also thank you for the audience for listening and for any of your questions or comments after I speak with you today. As Marianne said, I'm Dr. Jamie Mackler. I'm a naturopathic physician and a licensed acupuncturist. I've been in practice for about 12 years. I've been in clinics with MDs, other NDs, massage therapists, hypnotherapists, and all sorts of other CAM providers who I refer to and they refer back to me. And today I'm going to speak to you about what is complementary and alternative medicine. What can it do for the aging population? And again, I want to tell everybody that there are some recommendations in here and ideas of what different alternative therapies might be for common complaints. These are not health recommendations, and please make sure to ask your doctor or your healthcare practitioner about any of these issues, especially if you're on any medications. So what is CAM, or Complementary and Alternative Medicine? It's a group of diverse medical and healthcare systems, practices, and products that are not presently considered to be part of conventional medicine. In 2007, there was a major health interview survey where we found that approximately 38% of people used CAM products or other alternative medicine in the past 12 months. In that same study, we found that 83 million adults spent $33.9 billion out of pocket on these medicines. And the costs are 11.2% of total out-of-pocket expenditures on healthcare. So why am I talking about this? Well, it seems pretty obvious that it's popular. And in order to understand what CAM is or what complementary and alternative medicine truly is, we need to know what it's not. When most people go to their doctors, they think, I'm going to make an appointment, I'm going to have an exam, I might have some lab work, I might be given a medication, maybe that will involve surgery. That's what's considered mainstream medicine in America. Complementary medicine, on the other hand, may involve some of these things, but complementary medicine is defined as if a mainstream practice is used together, if a non-mainstream practice, sorry, is used together with conventional medicine. An example of this might be, let's say Bob is a 68-year-old male and he has back pain and he's been taking its ibuprofen for a while and it's not getting better. He goes to his doctor, he says, "Doc, this isn't helping, what can I do?" The doctor might say, "Here's a new kind of medication that you can take." Or he may say, "Why don't you go to this person who's a massage therapist or a chiropractor," and he recommend a different type of therapy. Another important definition here is, what is alternative medicine? This is when a non-mainstream practice is used instead of conventional medicine. Now take the same person, Bob. Maybe he doesn't go to his doctor. Maybe he thinks, "Well, you know, I've tried these medicines before and they don't work. So I'm going to try a different modality." Maybe he goes to a chiropractor or a massage therapist, or he goes somewhere for acupuncture. But another definition I wanted to bring up today is the concept of integrative medicine. And this is more used now probably than the words can, complementary and alternative medicine. And part of the reason might be is that what we're trying to do is actually bring together the conventional and what's considered alternative for a number of reasons. First of all, safety, making sure that everybody on your medical team is aware of what's happening. And also because many of the things that used to be considered complementary and alternative are actually becoming more mainstream. There are a lot of different types of alternative therapies or complementary therapies that people are using today. The most popular, from a follow-up to that 2007 study that I mentioned earlier in a 2012 study, showed that the most common complementary health approaches that adults are using are what they call the natural products. These are things like supplements, herbs, things that you might buy at your local health food store or today even at a place like Costco. They're easily accessible. Typically, they're not very expensive to buy. And so they become quite popular as people are looking for things to as alternatives for their medications, potentially. There are a lot of other modalities, things like deep breathing exercises, yoga, manipulation, massage, that are all becoming more and more popular over time. So what are all of these different modalities? There's a lot of different ways to categorize them, but I find that this picture really helps kind of give you a visual of what some of the different approaches might be that are complementary and alternative. The first, as I mentioned about the natural products, is if you look at the little red person up on the right of the screen, the biologically based approaches. These are those things, the diets, the herbs, the vitamins, that are now essentially available in many different places. There's some pluses and minuses to this. The availability is amazing. Potentially not having to go get something else prescribed sounds good, but then there are safety issues here. People deciding, "Well, I've heard that X herb is better than taking my statin medication, and so I'm going to take this instead." Or I'm on this medication and I want to increase what that's going to do for me, so maybe I go and I get a new type of supplement. And without telling a healthcare provider, there are potential risks to that. The second type of therapy that is quite popular, as you can see by the little yellow hands, are manipulative or body-based therapies. Again, quite popular. A lot of people now go for massages, whether it's just for relaxation response, to decrease their pain, or for other issues. Many people go to chiropractors or osteopathic physicians. All of these body-based manipulative therapies are ones that include either kneading the muscles, manipulating the muscles, or helping with joint mobility and potentially manipulation, often to treat musculoskeletal conditions. The third type are mind-body interventions. Many people think of yoga or breathing techniques as part of the mind-body intervention. Again, very safe therapies that you don't really need a prescription to use, so very accessible for the general public. With the invent of iPhones and things, you can even get breathing exercises on your phone. So it's a really good way of getting an inexpensive way to help relax. Energy therapies. There are different types of therapies such as Reiki, Qigong, Tai Chi, some of which involve movement, but essentially help move energy through the body in different ways. And last but not least, and I wanted to cover this last, was if you look at the bottom, the alternative medical systems. And the reason that I wanted to talk about this last is many of the things that people think about when we talk about CAM are substituting one thing for something else. So like I mentioned, people have heard of something called red rice yeast because it has statin-like effects. And so somebody might say, well, instead of taking this drug, I'm going to take this supplement. Or maybe it's turmeric is good as an anti-inflammatory, so maybe I'm going to take this herb instead of taking the NSAID that I was taking prior. But I think what's important when looking at CAM therapies isn't just replacing one treatment with another. It's going to a practitioner who can evaluate what's going on with you from potentially a different perspective. Many of the people who seek out CAM therapies are seeking them out because what is happening in their convention, with their conventional physician potentially isn't working or isn't working as well as they would like it to be, maybe because there are side effects. When we're talking about different systems of medicine, we're not just talking about swapping something out, we're actually looking at the body in a different way. And what I mean by that is, a doctor like myself, who's a naturopathic physician and an acupuncturist, has a different system of medicine that I use to evaluate. So if you come to see me and you say, oh, I have a headache, and I went to my doctor and they gave me a pain medication for my headache, I'm going to ask you a lot of different questions. Where is your headache? What makes it better or worse? When does it come on? Does weather or temperature make a difference? And all of this information that I am gathering when I'm talking to my patients will give me different clues into not only a different therapeutic modality, but also how do I evaluate this? There's going to be different ways in which I'm going to treat different people with different types of headaches. So it's not as simple as I'm going to take this medicine and substitute it. It's I'm going to look at this person in a completely different way, call what's going on with them a different thing, and therefore treat it in a different way. So it's not just as simple as going and pulling something off the shelf as a substitute. So why should we care about CAM? Well, we kind of talked about this already, that it's popular. But it's not just popular for everybody, or for younger people or people of a particular demographic necessarily. It's even popular for older Americans, even people who early in their life may have not have been exposed to these types of therapies. In that same study I mentioned in the beginning by the NIH, CAM use in the past 12 months among adults by age category shows us that even at 50 to 59, 50 to 60, or 60 to 69, 70 to 84 years old, we're seeing over 30% of people using CAM, even just within that year. There are a few other studies that were done by other organizations, one by the AARP, as above, the over 53% of people age 50 or over use CAM, and another study done by the Health and Retirement in 2005 that said that nearly 88% of older Americans report to be using CAM. There are very big differences, obviously, in the percentages that are shown, and some of these are based on has it been in the past year, has it been over their lifetime, and what they're considering in the definition of CAM. But the thing that's important to note here is it's obviously over 40%, and it may even be well over 50%. So again, why is this so popular, and why might you or your loved one benefit from these types of medicines or modalities? Pain relief is one of the number one reasons why people seek out alternative care. And so many people have pain that we need ways of effectively treating this. I know you had another discussion earlier on this committee about this issue. Maybe some of these modalities are actually more effective. There are some diagnoses in Western medicine that don't have a lot of great therapies. It can potentially improve quality of life. Obviously, if you feel less pain, you can get around better, and you can get out and do the things that you want to do more easily. Less side effects are safer, natural, and consistent with beliefs and philosophical orientation. We're going to touch upon all of these points as we go through some of the different types of issues that people might use CAM providers for. So back pain. I like to use this as an example because so many people have back pain. 60 to 70% of people in industrialized countries have back pain at some point in their lives. We also know as the patient population ages that more and more people will potentially have deterioration of discs and further exacerbations of this pain. Another reason I bring up the back pain isn't just because it's quite common, it's also because it's one of the issues where even the American College of Physicians recommends both acupuncture, manipulative therapies, massage, and many other complementary modalities as first-line therapies for both acute and chronic pain. So this isn't something that's just in an alternative medicine journal. These are things that are now coming to the fore in the conventional world as well, and may even be recommended before many of the things that you would have commonly used in the past for these issues. Another very common issue that people go to the doctor for, another type of pain, is knee pain or osteoarthritis of the knee. Over 13% of adults between the ages of 60 and 64 years old have symptomatic radiographic and knee osteoarthritis. And among people surviving into the next decade, 20% will have the symptomatic advanced or end-stage osteoarthritis. So what can we do about it? There are a number of studies on acupuncture and electroacupuncture specifically for knee osteoarthritis because it decreases pain, decreases opiate usage after surgery, and increases mobility. Once again, we're getting back to increasing quality of life for people. If you can move around, if you can get out of bed because you have less pain, we're automatically helping quality of life. There are a number of other CAM modalities that are shown effective for osteoarthritis or pain. Many of those are popular things that you might have heard in the past, things like glucosamine, turmeric, bromelain, boswellia. If anybody wants, I have a number of research articles that could talk specifically about mechanisms of actions of these things, but I didn't necessarily think that was pertinent to this talk, but I'm happy to share any of that with you. Another important topic that this committee, I'm sure, has to address in the aging population and dealing with healthcare concerns is the effects of dementia as people age. Over 110,000 people in the state of Washington have been found to have dementia in 2010, and by 2020, they think upwards of 140,000 people will be suffering with this issue. This is a major area where I think complementary and alternative medicine can have an impact because an impact is needed, and there's some great studies in all of the things that I've listed here that can help with dementia. And again, I want to use this again as an example. Part of the reason I'm listing all of these different modalities and different potential therapies isn't because any one of these things is necessarily going to solve the problem. But if you have a physician or an alternative medicine provider, either a naturopath, acupuncturist, chiropractor, many other different types of providers who can take a look at a person from a different perspective, maybe run different types of lab tests, take a different kind of history, and figure out what may or may not be adding to the concerns that this patient has, you can better figure out which of these things on this long list that I have here might be best fitting. There are great studies about the effects of ginkgo, for example. People hear about this all the time, but there are many other herbs that have anti-inflammatory effects, that have effects to increase circulation, both to the brain or other parts of the body. A lot of the studies that I've looked into are complicated. There's not an easy cause and effect answer to any one of these things, but sometimes there's relationships between more than one of these supplements and how they might work together. Because if you think about how the systems work in your body, there is no one vitamin that is in charge of every pathway. For example, if we look at omega-3 fatty acids and B12 together, we find that in patients who have a lower omega-3 fatty acid content, especially the DHA, which is one of the omega-3 fatty acids, they are less able to utilize their B12 and folic acid. So it may not just be simple, oh, you're too low in your essential fatty acids. It might be that things that work synergistically in your body need to be improved in order to get an effect. Estrogen or balancing hormones. We know that taking estrogen postmenopausally does not have a negative effect on dementia, and if taken initially on the onset of menopause, it may actually have beneficial effects. There's a lot of debate about hormones, both in the conventional and alternative communities, but we need to take a look at a person as an individual, their risk factors, and whether or not treatments like these may be helpful. The gut-brain relationship or microbiome, this is also in the news a lot lately, about how what is going on in your stomach or your gut affects other parts of your body, whether that's general information, inflammation, whether that's how it affects your mind. There was a recent study in 2016 that showed that the use of proton pump inhibitors, or PPIs, as I have on here, increases your risk of dementia. So we need to find things that can help people's GERD rather than a PPI, or reduce the use of PPIs as much as possible. Part of the reason that might have an effect is on the above is maybe decreasing the acid in your stomach has an effect on the bacteria that are in your stomach, therefore changing the microbiome, maybe therefore having an effect on the dementia. So I mentioned GERD. This is one of the most common reasons people see their family physicians. And like I said, not only does being on a proton pump inhibitor potentially increase the risk of dementia, it also decreases the magnesium in the body. It also can lead to vitamin B12 deficiency because it cuts down on the absorption of B12. I'm not saying that these drugs should never be used. I'm just saying we need to think about all these potential side effects when making the decision to use them. And also to think about, well, what can we use instead? So there are lots of things we could potentially use instead, depending on what the issue is. For example, you know, the reason a PPI is used is the idea is that somebody has too much acid in their stomach and things are coming up. So why suddenly does this person have too much acid in their stomach? Are they eating things that are causing food to come back up that they're not digesting properly? Do they have inflammation in the esophagus? Is there something that we need to heal in that tissue besides just stopping the acid? And there are plenty of herbs like deglycerinated licorice or Demulsin herbs that will heal that tissue. Do they actually need help in their digestion? Is it not just that they have too much acid? Is it that they don't have enough pancreatic enzymes or have impaired digestive enzymes? I've also found people who have digestive upset actually don't have enough hydrochloric acid sometimes in their body and therefore cannot digest things. So there's a lot of different options depending on the patient's history, certain risk factors, and also to look at other causes. Do they have bacterial overgrowth? Do they have a hernia? Do they have allergies to some of the foods that they're eating that are causing some of this upset? Going back now to why is this so important to this committee? Again, with less pain, more mobility, less side effects, people will be able to stay in their homes longer. And I'm guessing that that is part of what this committee wants to see. Or once people are out of their homes, how can they feel their best wherever they are? So going back to one of the slides I had earlier of all the different types of CAM modalities, not all, only are there different types of modalities, there are all sorts of different practitioners that might specialize in some of these modalities. I myself am a naturopathic physician. I have a Washington State license. I have a national certification in acupuncture. I have a acupuncture license in the state of Washington. Why is that important? Because many practitioners who practice CAM modalities have gone through 4 or more years of graduate education, they've passed boards, they can potentially help figure out some of the ways in which these substances that people might want to take or those modalities that people might want to use may be affected may affect their medications if they're already on a medication, or vice versa, how those medications might be affecting other modalities that they might be trying. And that's not to say that there aren't some amazing other CAM providers. There are people like life coaches and hypnotherapists and lay herbalists and lay homeopaths that often might have a lot of experience with some of these natural substances. And it just really takes a little bit of research and potential recommendations from either your primary healthcare provider or other loved ones around you to help kind of figure out who the best person for you and your situation might be. So I have a couple of slides, just a little bit more about the type of degrees that I have, primarily because I think a lot of people don't really know what a naturopathic physician is or what they could potentially do for you. Naturopathic physicians have a 4-year medical degree. on top of their regular college education, so post-BA, BS. They have to pass national board exams. In the state of Washington, Oregon, and a number of other states, we're actually considered as primary care providers. That's important because it means that they may be able to manage your medications as well as herbal supplements and give recommendations of how these might be able to work for you. One thing I didn't write up here, but I think is important to point out, however, is in the aging population, Medicare actually does not cover naturopathic physicians. And because Medicare does not cover naturopathic physicians, even if you have a secondary plan, in many cases, you actually can't get coverage because you can't bill Medicare before. So for many patients who are over the age of 65, they may have to pay out of pocket for these types of services, which is unfortunate. Acupuncturists. In the state of Washington, we're actually now called the EAMP, or East Asian Medicine Practitioner. Part of the reason is the people who usually call acupuncturists are trained in many other modalities as well. Often Chinese dietetics, either Tui Na or Shiatsu, or different types of Chinese body work. They often study herbology as well. Like naturopaths, they often go to postgraduate education. Most of these degrees are master's level degrees. There's a national certification as well as a state license for these practitioners. Again, many insurance plans do cover this modality, some for only pain codes, but again, not if Medicare is primary. So this is a little bit of an obstacle for the aging population. So much of what I said is kind of a general overview of CAM therapies. The one thing I always like to point out, however, is many of the things that people consider CAM or alternative are really just basic health. We all know these things, and many of us do them, and some don't do them, which is diet is truly key. The simplest thing, and the thing that's probably not going to hurt most people, is to eat more vegetables, and we know this. It's really the mainstay for any holistic health philosophy is to eat healthier food. And it's something, the reason I bring it up here is, yes, it's simple, but it's something anybody can do. You don't need to go to a special health care provider to do this kind of thing. That's not to say that there isn't more specific nutritional advice that may be helpful for specific conditions, but for the general population, this is something that everybody can do on their own. Keep moving. Again, we know this as well, but it is really important. There was a retroactive study on the effects of dementia, and we find that if 20 years prior to the diagnosis, people changed their diet and lifestyle for the better, so they moved more, they ate more fruits and vegetables, maybe they took even a little bit more fiber in their diet, there's a huge difference in dementia rates. Unfortunately, by the time you're at that point, it takes a lot more to move the curve. The last thing I wanted to end with here tonight is to have fun. A lot of these things are quite serious topics. If you or your loved one is ill, there are a lot of decisions to make, both in how you're going to treat them, who you're going to take them to get treated by, what kind of plans you're going to make, not just for now, but as they get even older, or as you get older and are trying to help them. So it's interesting, when I looked for a little picture on the web for play, all the pictures were of kids. And I thought that was kind of ridiculous, because I think we can have fun at any age, and we all know that play is good for our health. So thank you for listening to me tonight. I know that you probably have a lot more questions about details, and I know I kind of rushed through a lot of just sort of big topics. So please feel free to ask questions, and I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Jamie. We'll begin with the commission and our questions. Allie?
Hi, thank you for your talk. It was very interesting. Are you aware of any Clark County resources so seniors can access these services that aren't covered by Medicare?
That are covered by the county specifically?
Yeah, or like free clinics or low-cost clinics, things like that, so they can access them.
I actually don't know very many.
Okay.
There is a woman not too far away from here in downtown who has an acupuncture community clinic,
mm-hmm.
And her clinic sees multiple people in one room at a time for a low cost.
Nice.
So it's not necessarily directed towards the aging population, but it is a a less expensive option if people are comfortable in a group setting. There's another practitioner in my office who offers the same type of setting one night a week. Mm-hmm. Besides that, I'm not that tapped in to other alternative care resources specifically, but I think it's a good thing to consider.
Yeah.
And to try to figure out how to create something like that. I think that would be a great resource.
Great, thank you.
I have a question.
Donna.
Generally speaking, should acupuncture be painful?
That's a good question. There are different ways that different ways that different practitioners are trained. Typically, when I'm doing acupuncture on my patients, it is not a painful experience. There are times at which, depending on the point and the way that you're manipulating the needle, that you may get a different type of sensation. Things like a tingling and aching in an area are fairly common, but it should not feel like I have a needle stuck in me or sharp. Occasionally, there are points near extremities that you might feel more at, but the idea of pain in the way that you might think for having a needle inserted in your body is not how it typically feels to most people. We use single-use sterile needles that are very, very thin-gauged. A typical needle that you might be injected by in your conventional doc's office might be 25 or 27 gauge at the very most. And as the numbers go up, the thinness, it becomes more thin. Typically, my needles are more like 34 or 36 gauge, so they're very thin, and they don't.
I had a very bad experience with it, with pain.
Mm.
And I told the Chinese acupuncturist I was in pain, and she said, that's okay. And I've never done it since.
Yeah.
What is the success rate for acupuncture in smoking, helping people to stop smoking?
That's also a good question. I don't have a stat specifically. There are two things that I always tell my patients who are trying to stop smoking, and the most important thing is if you're not ready, there is no point I can put in your body that's going to help you stop smoking. But what I would say is that I have definitely had patients who have tried to quit before, and with even just 6 weeks of regular acupuncture, and oftentimes I'm giving them some other treatment as well. I have a little list of things for people to do at home, both prior to and during the quitting time, that their success rate is much greater when they have help. Speaking of other modalities that help, I've also had great success referring people for hypnotherapy for smoking cessation as well.
And I have one more question. I love massages, and I think they're very healing and helpful, but frequently a massage therapist will say, what do you want? What is there a better answer to that question than saying, just medium pressure all over? I never know what to say.
Mm.
I mean, is that an individual thing, or is there a special healing technique to this?
Well, I think it depends on what you're going to the massage therapist for. There are many different types of massage. Some people literally go just because they want to relax. If you just want to relax, then you might just say to them, I would like a relaxation massage. There are different types of massage. There are things called deep tissue massages, where they might do a lot deeper kneading into the body. And again, depending on what you're going in for, some types might be better than others. Also, it might depend a little bit on your health background. If I have a patient who has fibromyalgia, sometimes they have to have very gentle therapies or things get exacerbated.
Sure.
Also depends on what other modalities you may or may not be using at the time.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck.
Well, thank you. I guess at first I was really surprised with the 38% of adults that have reported using this.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was very low,
It
would seem like, to me.
Right.
And so.
Well, it's interesting. Is that, that's the number that was in the first slide, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was back in 2007. 2007.
Well, it's interesting. You know, as I said, I quoted probably four different studies that talked about how people use CAM, and this percentages went anywhere from 30 to 80-something percent.
Yeah. Okay.
And some of it is based on the amount of time that they surveyed. Like, was it in the past 12 months? Like, in this particular study, it was
right.
in the past 12
right.
months. In another study, it was over their lifetime.
Right.
It also depends on what they defined CAM as, and maybe I should have talked more about specifically what each study said.
Yeah.
You know, for some, it might have been having to go to another practitioner versus some of the studies talked about just going to the health food store and picking magnesium off the shelf or vitamin C off the shelf.
Right.
So that's why there's some differences in some of these numbers.
Okay. The other thing that we've been really all about increasing quality of life and everything, and you really hit on that, so thank you for doing that. That was really great. The other part is the whole insurance thing, and I know that if I sat down with my doctor and I said, okay, now this is what I want to go and do, my doctor would probably have a heart attack, you know, probably like, oh, no, you can't do that, you know, I mean, very traditional, and so is that the reason why, and I don't, I'd have to check, but I don't think my insurance would go and cover anything like that, any CAM type stuff.
Right. So the question is, does insurance cover this kind of stuff?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So a lot of insurances actually do cover this type of stuff. Unfortunately, not often after patients reach Medicare age. So in the state of Washington, every health insurance company has to at least offer a plan that covers some type of complementary and alternative medicine. That doesn't mean that all of their plans do, but they have to offer a plan that includes some of that.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It depends a little bit on the insurance, though, as to if that what category that provider falls into. Like I said, naturopathic physicians in the state of Washington legally can be a primary care physician.
Uh-huh.
However, on some insurance plans, you can use them as a primary care physician, whereas in other insurance plans, they're considered complementary care providers, and you may have to have either a referral to that type of physician, or they might fall into another category. You might have a different type of copay. There's different systems for each insurance company.
Hmm. I'll have to check into that.
That's a good question. I don't know if there's any insurance company that is flawless to work with necessarily, and that tend to have better benefits. Regions Blue Cross Blue Shield over time typically has had really great benefits for their patients, but a whole host of other, Providence has alternative health care benefits, Aetna has alternative health care benefits, United has alternative health care benefits, Cigna, Moda, LifeWise, Kaiser, I mean pretty much all of the major plans have a plan that will cover some of these things. Again, that doesn't mean you have them. You know, for instance, Kaiser, for example, if you have just a Kaiser plan, we're not considered primary care and we're not on the major plan, but if you have an add-on called complementary health plans, depending on the plan you have, you can either get referred for acupuncture or naturopathic medicine, or some people have a self-referral plan. A lot of the other companies for acupuncture either have a referral that you need to have, or they have something that they call a pre-authorization, which is actually a post-authorization, where you go see an acupuncture provider, especially if it's for pain, they give you a diagnosis, then they log into the company and say, can I have X number of visits for X diagnosis code, and they say yes or no. So every company has a different system. Some you can literally just walk in the door and have your services covered, but that's becoming less, and it's actually becoming less of a reality recently with changes in insurance.
Okay, do we have Chuck?
Okay, so I happen to have Kaiser. Now then, if my doctor, you know, because I have a chronic pain thing going on, and so That's why I don't think Kaiser covers, but I have had this chronic pain for years and years and years. And it's on record and all of that. I've even been in national pain studies. Mm-hmm. So is there a way then that I could go and...
And ask?
Yes.
That's a good question. So you can ask, and if you have a plan that covers, let's say acupuncture, just as an example, he can write you a referral. Now the doctor can decide whether or not he wants to write you a referral.
Mm-hmm.
If your insurance does not cover it, there is probably nothing he can do or mm-hmm. she can do
mm-hmm.
In that regard. If you do have coverage, he or she can make a decision whether or not they want to refer you for that. Typically, for chronic pain conditions, especially if other modalities have not helped or other conventional treatments have not helped, many of the doctors are open to it. For precisely a lot of the reasons I talked about is now it is recommended for certain issues commonly amongst physicians. That being said, not every physician will necessarily recommend.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any other questions from the commission? I have one. You did explain naturopathic doctors. What is an osteopathic doctor? Could you explain the difference and what that entails?
Mm-hmm. Traditionally, osteopathic doctors were taught manipulative therapies, kind of similar to what chiropractors do today. Over time, osteopathic physicians have become more and more mainstream. There are many people who are considered osteopaths, they might have the letters DO after their name, that primarily do the same thing as MDs do. Many, they might go to a DO school initially, but their residencies are now integrated into the conventional medical community, so they may have gone to a residency with other MDs. So it depends on the osteopath. Traditionally, they were doing more manipulation, more physical medicine, but a lot are family practitioners these days or other types of specialists and essentially are treated just like MDs. So if you're looking for somebody who specializes in some of these manipulative therapies, you just have to check in on the osteopath that you're looking at to see if that's what they do or not.
If the physician is a DO, is mm-hmm. there a greater chance that their services would be covered by traditional insurance?
Yes.
And I do know that Kaiser does have DOs, Chuck. Mm-hmm.
But like I said, DOs often work like an MD these days. Not all of them, but typically it's almost like a path to the same place for many DOs.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, if there's anyone else here that has questions, if you could wait 1 second, we have a lady over here.
I just want to, make a comment. I am with the Brain Injury Alliance of Washington, and a couple of my clients with TBIs have found some relief and help with acupuncture.
Hi, my name is Kathleen, and I'm with Sheba, and we help people with the Medicare journey making decisions. And my question has to do with if, and I agree, that the alternative treatments do improve quality of life, is there anything happening in the state of Washington to make alternative care more available to seniors through Medicare types of insurance?
That's a good question, and I don't know that I actually know the answer to that right now. I haven't really necessarily been following that, so I actually don't know. But I'll look into that if you want to give me your information.
Raise your hand. No.
No.
Okay. So moving forward, I know that you need continuing education with your license. Is that correct? I was just curious if you knew what kind of topics you were going to choose moving forward in the next year. Put you on the spot.
No, that's okay.
Or how many you need, just as comparison.
Oh, as
far units.
As what I need to re-credential my license. That's a good question, and it varies from state to state. So naturopathic licenses are, it's a state license. In the state of Washington, we need 20, it's not that many, it's 24 or so hours, and we also need a suicide prevention credit. And then for my acupuncture license, it's interesting, in the state of Washington, there isn't a specific continuing education requirement, but to keep my national certification, I need over 60 plus CPR in ethics on a 5-year rotating basis. What am I going to do in the next year? I actually do think working more with the aging population and is an interesting thing that I do work with people of all ages, but I don't think I have ever specifically taken a geriatrics class other than initially in school. So I think that would actually be a great thing to do, and there aren't a lot of them, so it would be a good thing to seek out. Most of my specialties in my office are I do a lot of pain relief and a lot of women's health, and so I'm always doing continuing education around those issues. I see a lot of patients with infertility issues, so I do a lot of work or a lot of my continuing education around that as well. And then I just pick based on what looks good and from the organizations that I've taken courses from before. Yeah, thanks for asking.
Okay, we have another question from Commissioner Roberge.
I know what menopause is, mm-hmm. but what's andropause?
That's a good question. So andropause is kind of like menopause, but for men. It's the decreasing of the androgenic hormones in a male. So when we think about menopause, we often think about the decrease of estrogen and progesterone and even testosterone in women. Men do go through a similar thing, different types of symptoms. But as men age, testosterone levels often go down. So there are a number of symptoms that are associated with testosterone deficiency, and those can be addressed as well.
But how do you address that?
Oh, how do I address that? Again, it depends on the patient, what their symptoms are and what their goals are. But there's a wide range of modalities that can help that. Some are as simple as diet and exercise. For example, if a man has a lot of central adiposity and they have insulin resistance, sometimes just changing their diet and giving them lower sugar diet will decrease the transformation of some of those testosterones to the estrogens, and that can be helpful. There are different herbal therapies that can help in that regard. And then acupuncture can help. So, and then also, you know, in some men, if their testosterone levels truly are low, you can do testosterone therapy. So there are different ways, again, depending on the particular patient, to address all of these things.
Do you ever use acupuncture on pets?
I don't personally, although when I was in naturopathic school, I worked at a holistic vet clinic for 7 years, and there are veterinarians that do acupuncture. The laws about acupuncturists working on pets are not, I can't technically work on a pet because I'm not a veterinarian, so I can't do that under my license, but there are people who can.
Any more questions?
So I wondered if you, you know, talked a little more about the dementia piece and relation to other toxins, environmental toxins, mm-hmm. mold, illness, Lyme's, other things that are contributing to that. I didn't really hear you say anything about that. And just FYI, I have Blue Cross Blue Shield, and my primary physician is naturopathic and has been my whole life, so I only do that. Know Jamie pretty well, so anyway, she's a great doc if anyone's looking for one. But could you talk a little more about the other things? Because there's a lot of research out there right now, and this is going to cripple our country, as we all know, this whole dementia Alzheimer's thing, if we don't get it figured out. And there is doctors that are curing and reversing it. So if you're not aware of some of the work they're doing, you should become. But Jamie and I talked about this recently. But can you identify that a little more?
I can, although it sounds like you probably know as much as I do about some of these great topics. So one of the things that Lynn was talking about is, besides all of the things I had on my list about dementia, there's some research out there about the effects on different environmental toxins, mold potentially, other viruses, bacteria, and spirochetes that can affect our system and potentially cause symptoms of dementia and or cause true dementia. And by working with some of these things or decreasing the load of these organisms or detoxing the body from some of these metals can have a positive effect on memory. And I don't have a long list of studies or anything like that with me today, but I wanted to at least speak to what you're talking about. I don't do a lot of metal testing in my practice. I don't do a lot of mold exposure testing and those kinds of things, but they do exist out there, and there are a lot of practitioners who do them. And so if it's something that I'm concerned about, if doing the basics that I typically do in my practice are not helping or I don't think are enough for that particular person, I will send my patients to those practitioners.
Oftentimes what I hear is that older adults don't have enough time with their physicians. So when you have someone visiting, how much time do you normally spend with them?
That's a really, really good question, because I think that's one of the best things about seeing naturopathic physicians often is the amount of time that we spend, because there are so much information you can glean by getting a good history. So my initial visit with patients is an hour and a half, and my follow-ups are typically an hour. Sometimes I will do shorter visits if it's somebody I've been seeing for a long time and it's a basic lab check or we're just checking in on something, but almost all of my visits are an hour and a half or an hour. And I think it is really important to identify things as simple as medication interactions, getting a good diet history, learning about kind of the intricacies of your patient's life to figure out not only what things you think will help them because of their diagnosis, but what's realistic for them to be able to do, and working with them to figure out how they can do those things that are most beneficial for them.
Thank you, Dr. Mackler.
You're welcome.
Okay, now we'll move on to new business. This month, the Clark County Council declared November to be the National Caregivers Month. And to talk to us about it, Christina Marneris from the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities Medicaid Transformation Project update is here.
Thank you very much for the time to come and share a little information. So in celebration of National Family Caregivers Month, ATSWA is very pleased to offer some new services to the community. The state of Washington is currently undergoing a Washington Medicaid Transformation Demonstration Project. And so essentially what it means is here in Southwest Washington, and specifically here in Clark County, we will be expanding the services that we offer to older adults as well as family caregivers. There's two new services that we will offer. One is called Medicaid Alternative Care, and that essentially looks at our very successful family caregiver support program and provides similar services, but it's for those individuals who already qualify for Medicaid long-term care services but are choosing not to access it. And that could be that their participation for care may be too high, or they're concerned about estate recovery, about, you know, the risk of having to contribute to their care through their estate. And so they're choosing not to access those services. So Medicaid alternative care would be a really nice fit for them, because that program has no estate recovery and it also has no participation for care. The types of services that a person could access would be things like respite care, caregiver education, education in general about resources, and also access to supplies and equipment. And then furthermore, we're doing an expanded project called Tailored Supports of Older Adults. And we find this one very exciting. One, because it's for those folks who have the functional eligibility to qualify for Medicaid services, but financially, they don't qualify yet. So it's for individuals who may have a higher level of income, but still don't have enough income to provide care for their long-term, or to finance their long-term care needs. And you're gonna see very similar services there as well, as I just mentioned with MAC. And then in addition to that particular program, it could also be that older adult who maybe doesn't have that informal support, doesn't have that spouse or adult children around that can help support them. So we're really excited to be able to offer that. And then additionally, we've also updated some of our resources on the website. And so I'm just going to scoot over to that station really quickly and walk you through that so you can access those services as well. Okay, so if you just click on I'm a Family Caregiver, it's going to bring you over to some options. And if you click on Caregiver Newsletter, it's going to bring you to a nice education site that's really intended to help seniors and family caregivers have some access to personalized advice, really aimed at helping them to age in place. If you click on this little video, it'll tell you how to navigate the site. It's about 5 or 10 minutes long, so I'm not going to spend time doing that tonight, but just know that that'll give you a great little introduction. But I did want to click through and show you some of the offerings that the site has. So you can see right in here, you can kind of take a look and click on items that might be of interest. And so because we mentioned pain tonight, I'll kind of walk you through what's available through there. You can see that you can scroll through and learn more. And then there's also access to quick care tips. So, and then with that, there's some great little videos that you can watch. And the only thing that it will require of you is a login, so basically your name, an email address, and I think there might be one or two other questions. It's free, though. You're not going to get, like, ads constantly. You're just going to just get a welcome email from us that says, thank you for joining. If you need us, we're here for you. And that's about the extent of the communication you're going to get from this site. And then I'm sitting here trying to remember what my password is for this. Okay. But if you scroll down here, I will just click this really quick and we'll watch a little bit of this. So. Oh, the audio. Well, what you'll see is there's a video here, and basically what it's doing is it's helping to teach this person, if you have difficulties with gripping and opening doors, what's an easy solution to that? And it's narrated, and you can see she's just simply adding rubber bands to the door handle so that it becomes easier to grip. And so there's a number of different videos and learning resources on here that are very similar to this. And then because I know that we've got some partners in the room who may be doing education for their clients, one of the things I love about this is you can come in here and take a look at newsletters, and then there's additional resources. We also talked about dementia tonight, so you can see there's tons of articles and learnings available for dealing with dementia, and if you click through, you'll see there's even more there. I happen to write for a couple of newsletters as a volunteer for some of the organizations, and so I come in here, I grab the topic that I want to talk about, I credit this Active Daily Living site with as being the resource, and then you've got great content that's been vetted by this organization and the educators that they work with. And so it's just an easy thing for either you to use or a family member who may be wanting to learn more about how do they age in place or a family caregiver who's looking for resources. So that's one great resource that we've added. And then I did want to point us to the important links section. So the state of Washington has recently released some great information around dementia. And so this is a terrific resource, Dementia Roadmap and a Guide for Family and Care Partners. I think I had about 200 delivered to our office, and within the first day, they were gone. And that was from our community partners who said this is something that we think is important and we want to be able to share with the community. And then there's also an additional one for Safety Information Toolkit. So just wanted to kind of walk you through that there are a number of resources on that important link site that's really helpful to family caregivers. So those are three ways that we're really looking at how can we better support our family caregivers and older adults. But all of our traditional services are still there. We're just expanding to offer the two new services. And if you've got questions, our rec cards are in the back there. You're always welcome to take one and give us a call. And then I'll be here till the end of the meeting if you've got any questions. And that's it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Do we have a link to that?
Sorry?
Have we linked that to our website?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Cool.
Okay, earlier this evening, we met in a work session and discussed our annual report and the highlights and recommendations from 2017, which we will be presenting to the County Council at our next meeting, January 16th. So we would like to take some time to go through those highlights and recommendations now. Do we want it read?
Sure. I don't think it's really necessary.
Well, basically, the COA has put together from every month that they've had a presentation on all the topics of supportive services. We'll have an annual report prepared that gives highlights of every month's presentation and topic. And earlier today, they finalized their major findings and recommendations that they'll put forward to the community and county council in January. So basically, they focus on support for family caregivers, mental health and aging, social engagement, aging and suicide, and connecting services to seniors. And with those findings, the recommendations kind of reinforce the need to have some kind of call to action to make those better resources here in our community. So they are highlighting the services that are already here in our communities and working with those community partners and council as needed to increase efforts to raise awareness about the range of services available for people 60 and older. Working with community partners to advocate for development of additional memory care homes and facilities, as we heard that many times over the year, the need, the increase of the number of dementia patients that will be in our communities and the need for more additional memory care homes and facilities. Working with community partners to advocate for development of smaller assisted living facilities as an alternative to the larger nursing homes, to have more of those within Clark County. And working with community partners to encourage development of programs that support isolated elderly people. We had some examples of intergenerational programs that put together assisted living facilities and daycare facilities, as well as the Elder Friends model, which is a volunteer that visits an isolated senior and creates that bond. So that was active in Clark County, and we'd like to hopefully get that back up and running. So we're going to hope to collaborate to get that program back. The fifth one is we heard from Detective Mike Day on about the Elder Justice Center, and we heard from someone in the audience about the need for perhaps someone committed from the sheriff's side of things for the elder justice team. So we'd like to bring forward that recommendation. And next year, we heard some things about isolation and socialization issues and seniors that are isolated and mobility challenges. And as next year, they're focusing on transportation. They hope to really delve into the needs of the, or those roadblocks to socialization in relation to transportation. So that pretty much covers what we discussed earlier. Is there anything else that the commission would like changed or added? So I think if you guys are good, you'll do need a motion to approve the findings and recommendations, and we'll get those incorporated into the annual report for a presentation in January.
I would like to make that motion.
Thank you.
Second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, thank you very much, Jackie. Okay. Is there any public comment? Okay, seeing none, we will. Oh, very well.
Comes to these meetings to remind you that Sheba is available to help seniors navigate the Medicare journey. We do have open hours this month, especially because open enrollment ends December 7th. And so we just want to make you know that free services are available for unbiased information regarding making the Medicare decisions at the Sheba office.
Kathy, I have a question for you.
Oh, she's got a question.
So if you are a Medicare recipient and you're a current Medicare recipient, do you still have to go through the Washington Health Plan program to access that?
No. Once you're on Medicare, it's not through the Washington Health Plan program. It's through the Medicare options, which include a supplemental plan and a drug plan, or mutually exclusive to that is the Medicare Advantage plans. Medicare Advantage plans are county specific. The supplement plans and a drug plan can be taken with you anywhere you go, and they're also more expensive. Does that answer your question?
It does. I have another question, though. How would a person be able to access your services?
We have both. You can come in and see us. I've put some information on the table back there that includes our local phone number. We are located in the Old Tower Mall that's at 5411 Mill Plain in suite number 20, which is on the west side of the building. And we have advisors in the office typically between 11 and 3 Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But you can call us anytime and leave a message, and we'll make every attempt to call you back and hook you up with an advisor.
So the open enrollment involves what action for the Medicare recipients?
If the Medicare recipient is happy with their current coverage, they don't need to do anything. They keep their current plan. If they want to make a change, then and they need help doing that, they can come in and discuss with us what they're not happy about with their current coverage, and we'll give them the information they need to make a different choice.
Very good. So if a person has coverage under Medicare and they wanted to change their insurance provider or upgrade their service or downgrade their service and pay less money, that would all be something that your staff could help with.
Yes. And, you know, all our advisors are volunteers. They're retired professionals who've chosen to keep living a life of service. And they come in and they get trained and they give their time to help seniors navigate the journey.
So, Kathy, are you looking for volunteers?
Yes, we are. We're always looking for more people to come and be trained and give their time to help others.
Sounds like a great thing to do. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Yes.
My name is Joan Cayley, and I'm a community health clinical nurse specialist, and yes, I'm Allie's mother. But the reason I come because I'm interested in the geriatric population, and I was just want to make a comment on your plan and your recommendations. This afternoon, I was at the Healthy Living Collaborative quarterly meeting, and we talked about the policy agenda at the state and local level. And I would encourage you to submit your plan to the Policy Council of the Healthy Living Collaborative, which could be somebody that could help advocate for the recommendations you're making with the council. The policy committee is meeting, and you know, as you think through the issues on that policy agenda today, there was a void of dealing with children and with seniors. So, and the work that the commission is doing is so important that it would be good to get it to the Healthy Living Collaborative and have them at least watching. You know, they have, you know, actively support or watch. But some of the things that you're coming up with recommendations, they could add to their policy agenda or might consider that.
Very good. Thank you so much.
That is a great idea.
Hi, so my name is Tammy, and I'm a representative of Marshall and Furstenberg Community Center. And I just came, that was very interesting. I have to say, I just took a recent job change there and kind of was told it'd be nice to stop by here, really not knowing what to expect. So very interesting, thank you. But with what you said, I would just like to say where you were saying, you know, stay active, stay healthy, stay moving. We have a lot of that going on at Marshall and Furstenberg, and many of it is based on senior programs, such as Silver Sneakers, yes, ma'am, Silver and Fit, Optum, all different. Basically, these are programs that Medicare-eligible people that are contracted with the correct insurance groups provide a membership for these people to come exercise. And so we have many different levels of senior exercise, which is hopefully preventative of a lot of the things we've talked about tonight or aid in helping with that, but also social and things such as that. And I know Sheba also sometimes come to our Trapadero or Loopkey Community Center. I don't know every detail of everything that goes on because I am in the fitness portion, but I did leave schedules for our fitness programs and for our Trapadero and our Loopkey Community Center room for all the different, many of the things are free to get, you know, seniors out. There's dances and there's bingo and there's bridge groups and cribbage and just all sorts of things that go on there in addition to that. And I just wanted to step in and talk about it here a little bit tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I believe that Marshall Center still has, gives people with disabilities a break. Did you have, you used to have a program? You'll check it out. Okay. All righty. And the other thing, we've also in this county have the Veterans Assistance Fund, which is on Columbia. Never remember the cross street. So if anybody's got veterans that need help, they are open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. Okay. What it is they, it was formed, I don't know how many years back, but it was formed because a lot of veterans didn't want to deal with VA, so they were kind of helping them walk them through. They're open to any veteran, walk in, have a cup of coffee. You can have help with a service officer. We also house the Veterans Assistance Fund service officer there. So if a veteran that is homeless or low income, can go in and see if he can get help with a broad range of items. In this state, every county is supposed to have a Veterans Assistance Center. Small portion of our property tax helps fund it. And again, they can be helping with rent, clothes for job interviews, and it's been a while since I've been down there, but a broad range, and it's just a nice, another service. Like I said, they also help get both veterans connected with VA. And again, having your service officer there to help them with discovering if they have benefits coming and help walk them through the system of getting them approved. It'd be a good place to ask the question. And they, if they couldn't help, they'd definitely send them in the right direction.
Okay, last call. I think everybody's had a chance to say something. Thank you very much, and we'll adjourn.